I like it.
Coming to you live from the basement of an abandoned training facility where we talk about fighting, training, and events. It's the Fight Mixer Show, where you can hear about all the local and world combat sports happenings. Get ready. It's time to gear up and square up because we're going live on the Fight Mixer Show.
Happy Thursday, boys and girls. Welcome to the Fight Mixer. We're here with this badass. I've been waiting years to talk to you, Mr. Dan Rich, the man, the myth.
What's going on, guys?
How you doing?
Doing great.
Awesome. So what have you been up to? What's been going on in your world?
Oh, man, I do a lot of things. You know, I'm an actor now. I do stunt acting. I just got done doing a movie with Michael J. White and Mickey Rourke. Next month, I'm actually going to be out with...
What?
And, you know, I play a lot of golf. Okay. I go out and I shoot all the time. You know, I'm staying busy.
Gotcha. And you're filming the movie The Commando. So you're going to be with Mickey Rourke and Dal Cerrone. You have a long storied acting career because you were a guest star on Walker, Texas Ranger, which was my dad's favorite show, CSI, all these great shows. And now you're going to be in a movie and starting with Dal Cerrone, the UFC legend, and Mickey Rourke. How's the transition from television to movies going?
It's an easy thing, man. You know, I've been in front of the camera, I can't even tell you how many times. So I'm pretty comfortable with the camera. The camera likes me. And the only thing is it made me grow my hair out. I had to grow a stupid beard. So, you know, you do what you got to do for some money, I guess.
I got you. And when's the movie going to be released?
You know, I just was told that it should be out in about 3 months. It's going to go on Netflix, obviously. They're doing a lot of these Netflix movies, but they're using A-list actors. And so that's kind of cool. You know, it's not going to theaters, but a lot of people see it on Netflix.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. So I want to talk about fighting, like kind of pivoting, go back to your fighting career. So we were just talking about this before the air, because on Sure Dog, it says that you debuted in 1998, but you fought way, way, way before that. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, way before that, man. I started fighting in 1990, and we'd fight in Mexico. We'd go down to Mexico and fight. They'd do the chicken fights, the dog fights, and then the people would fight. And by the time the people got to fight, you know, people were drunk. They were pulling out their guns. And, I mean, it was a free-for-all. But it was no rules, no rounds, no weight classes. And it was a pretty good time, man. I ended up going 32-0, never lost. And but I was fighting boxers, you know, and I was coming out in wrestling shoes. And don't laugh, but I was wearing spandex because spandex was cool back then. So we would wear wrestling shoes, spandex, no shirt. And these guys would come out, and they were boxers. You know, they'd try to box. I'd do a double leg, shoot behind them, grab the neck, rear choke. It was all she wrote.
Did you start off with wrestling, or what style did you start off with that got you into mixed martial arts?
I did. I started wrestling in junior high, and then I got into regular traditional karate, and then get into kickboxing, and then I got into Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So, yeah, I was a wrestler at first.
Awesome. And you're now a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. Do you have any school open? Do you somewhere where we can send students to learn from you? Anything that that's going on in as far as training is concerned?
Yeah, I'm training. You know, I own my own gym. I'm at the gym right now. Actually, got a class going on. It's called CanonBJJ.net. So CanonBJJ. I'm a fourth degree black belt under Carlos Machado. So shout out to Carlos. Yeah, man. A little bit of everything.
Hey, you were showing us a picture of it. Can we see that again?
Yeah, you want to see that? That's my gym.
Holy shit!
Guys are just getting ready to. The guys are just coming in right now. Class is getting ready to start, but I got somebody else running class tonight because I'm gonna be here with you guys.
Well done, well done. And I've been watching you since I was a kid, and you really landed on my radar in 2000. So obviously you know you came out like a bat out of hell, and you came to Pride. And Pride, I love Japanese pro wrestling. I love Japanese fighting. Kazushi Sakuraba, when he was completely unstoppable, when he was considered at one point in time the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. So I give you mad props for taking that fight. And then I see you a year later, and I see you at a promotion called Battle Arts. And Battle Arts was ran by Yuki Ishikawa. So Yuki Ishikawa. Yeah, and he actually fought Quentin Rampage Jackson in Pride. It was like a revenge fight because Quentin Rampage Jackson actually beat one of the pro wrestlers from Battle Arts, which was Alexander Otsuka, the butcher. Which, you know, Yuki Ishikawa, bad motherfucker. I don't care what happened in that fight. But yeah, like you pro wrestled against Dajiro Matsui, who's another Takata Dojo guy. Talk a little bit about that, because I had no idea you did pro wrestling until I did my research.
Oh yeah, I'm a big pro wrestler. I'm actually signed with Heart Legacy Wrestling out of Canada. So shout out to HLR for that. Heart Legacy Wrestling is one of the biggest shows in Canada. It's kind of like their version of the WWE. So I'm actually on the roster right now. I do pro wrestling for them, but COVID kind of shut us down. So, you know, we're on hiatus right now, but as soon as we're right back, we'll be back in Canada doing pro wrestling. And I've wrestled in Japan. I've wrestled in China. I've wrestled all over the United States, a bunch of indie stuff. I wrestled for New Japan.
Pancras.
I also wrestled in Pancras. I did a lot of fights in Pancras. Yuki Kondo was one of my big fights there. Yeah, Battle Arts was a good time. I got to watch Rampage. Actually, Rampage didn't have his shorts, so I gave him my red, white, blue shorts, and he turned those into a big deal because he was famous for wearing the red, white, and blue shorts with the chain. So those were my shorts he actually wore for that. Boss Rutten was on that show. Me and Boss got to hang out and do a lot of good things in Japan. That was a good time, yeah. Battle Arts, man, I haven't thought about that in a while. But yeah, Sakuraba, man, fight Sakuraba main event Pride 11 was probably my highlight of my life. I mean, I got to be the main event in Pride, and we're talking the undercard. I had, oh man, we had a big Tomcat Erickson. Big Tom was on the undercard. Vanderlei Silva was on the undercard. I mean, we're talking the who's who of MMA, and I was the main event with Sakuraba, who at the time was the number one fighter in the world.
Yeah, it was just super impressive. That's when you landed on my radar, and you had over 150 fights, and you not only did you fight in mixed martial arts, not only did you do pro wrestling, but you did kickboxing, you did bare knuckle. Like, how did you get involved with all these different styles, and why didn't you stick with just one?
Well, you know, to be a ultimate fighter at the time, you know, a real MMA fighter, mixed martial arts, you got to know everything. You got to know how to wrestle. You got to know how to kickbox. You got to know how to fight Lethwei. I fought Lethwei in Burma, Myanmar. Fought in K1. I mean, when I fight, it was like, you know, the UFC is the only one that's eluded me, but I fought in Pride, Pancras, K1. I mean, I fought in pretty much every big organization except the UFC. But when I'm doing it, I'm fighting the best of the best, man. I go fighting K1. I fight Frank Shamrock, for example. At the time, he was 5-time undefeated UFC middleweight champion. You know, when I fight, it's no one can ever say I ducked anybody, because I'll tell you that. I've fought the who's who of MMA. And, you know, not to say that I always won, because I got beat up a lot, man. I lost a lot of fights, but I won a lot of fights. There's only three guys with 100 wins, and I'm one of them. Travis Fulton, myself, and Dan Severn. And, you know, and the all-time MMA record. I mean, I don't care who you are, but in the all-time fights, if you go and look at anybody that fought MMA, there's, you know, the top two. It goes Travis Fulton, me, Dan Severn, and then Jeremy Horn, I believe, is number four. But, you know, fought anybody. I never ducked anybody. Let's just put it that way.
You also fought a very young Jake Shields.
And also, I did fight, man, Jake Shields, man. That kid is so tough. I fought him, and they said, hey, we're going to fight this wrestler. I'm like, great, I love fighting wrestlers. Come out, that guy gave me an arm triangle. Arm triangle the crap out of me, man. That was crazy.
Your two fights with Dan Severn, though, fucking classic. Like, bang out wars. And Dan Severn was not having bang out wars, but when you guys fought, holy shit.
And yeah, definitely entertaining. And Dan, you know, at one time, I think I tapped. And come up and he tapped, but he won't say he tapped. The ref didn't say he tapped, but you look on the video, his hand came up when I got him in the heel hook. So,
yeah.
You know, it is what it is.
You call him with, I think you call him with a kick, and then you landed a punch on him, and then he went down, and then you got the boots in, and then you put in the rear naked choke. I thought I saw him tap. I don't know about you, but.
Yeah, I had him in the heel. I had him in the heel hook, and he did tap, but, you know, it didn't go my way that night, but, you know, it is what it is.
Crazy fucking fights, man. And so the one thing that you mentioned, because you've done it all and you fought the who's who and you've been all over the world, you said the one thing that eluded you was going to the UFC. But, you know, everyone says the the echelons is going to the UFC. You have to make it to the UFC to call it a career or like a great legacy. But, you know, for me, you know, it's a bigger legacy and a bigger notch on the belt to go to Pride, considering Pride's no longer there. You fought for Pride. I mean, that was – do you ever feel like UFC or not making it to UFC was, you know, kind of something that you can look back on and say, man, I regret it. I wish I fought there.
You know, I wish I would have fought in the UFC just because, you know, a lot of kids, they know MMA and they know the UFC, but they don't know Pride. They don't know Pancras. They don't know King of the Cage or, you know, some of the smaller shows. All they know is UFC and the Ultimate Fighter. That's kind of like that era. But you got to remember, at the time when Pride was there, the UFC was big, but Pride was the pinnacle. Pride was the Super Bowl of mixed martial arts. If you fought in Pride, you were somebody. And not only did I fight, but I was the main event. And I have 3 Pride fights. And a lot of people only know of 2, but I actually have 3. So that's kind of cool.
Goddamn. And what would you say is your favorite fight in your career?
Obviously, Sakuraba, man. Main event, Pride 11. How can you beat that? I mean, you're fighting in front of, you know, 80,000 screaming fans, and then next day you're a household name in Japan. I mean, even when I go to Japan now, people are like, hey, that's Shannon the Cannon, Cannon-san. And it's the greatest thing because they're some of the best fans of all time.
Right. And your last fight was – when was your last fight? I believe it was last year.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, oh, my goodness. I fought Travis Fulton, the Iron Man. We fought in the M1 Global. It was a show that was promoted out here, and I ended up getting a broken arm in the second round, and that's why I tapped. I tapped due to a broken arm. First round. Judges gave it to me, so I beat Travis Fulton in one round, and then I tapped out in the second round. So some days you're the hammer, some days you're the nail, man. You know, it is what it is.
Hell yeah. And do you plan on fighting again, or do you want to call it a career? What's your game plan going forward?
Man, I'm never going to call my career, man. I'll be 80 years old, and if my phone rings, I'm going to fight. I'm never going to retire. I may not fight anymore, but I'm never going to retire. My phone still rings, man, believe it or not. People are like, hey, Shannon, we still want you to fight. So I got a fight coming up with Ragnarok in Norway, June 5th. It's a bare knuckle fight. I fought for BKFC. I'm actually 26-3 with 26 wins by knockout, bare knuckle. So to say that MMA was my forte, bare knuckle boxing is actually made for me. It's 2-minute rounds. We do 5 rounds. The title fights are 7. I'm telling you what, man, bare knuckle boxing is my forte. That's what I'm really good at. But when we're doing bare knuckle MMA in the beginning, NHB, no holds barred, that's when I was winning all the time because we just fought bare knuckle. Started putting on gloves, started wearing, you know, all the rules. It is what it is. I'm better at bare knuckle boxing. That's where I think I'm the best at.
Right. And what made you get involved? Because I when I talk to a lot of fighters, especially UFC, they had the reservations about bare knuckle fighting. It took a while for people to get on the bare knuckle bandwagon. But how'd you get involved with bare knuckle?
Man, you know, I've been fighting bare knuckle. For a long time, bare knuckle boxing was illegal, and I was fighting in the United States on these underground shows. You got to look at there's groups all over the United States, a lot of them in Las Vegas, California, Montana, Utah, Mexico, obviously. They were fighting in Florida with Kimbo and his group over there. You know, so for years I was fighting bare knuckle boxing, and then finally it came with Dave Feldman with the BKFC, and they sanctioned it. They got it actually sanctioned in the United States, and now it's legal, and you know it's great. I actually went over to BKB, fought in London, and I fought at the O2 Arena, and flying out to London as an American and you just go by yourself. I mean, that's pretty ballsy. A lot of guys won't do that, but I did it.
Yeah. Awesome. You got a question?
Who has a question?
I think Allie has a question.
Oh, what year did you fight Travis? He was our promoter and coach when it was like 2009, 2010. So I actually trained with him and met him a long time ago. So I was curious, when did you guys have your fight?
Travis Fulton, I fought him last year.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, last year we
fought. Yeah, sorry. They call him the Iron Man for a reason because he doesn't feel pain. So,
man, I kicked that guy in the jaw twice. And with my hook kick, usually knocks people out. If there's a video, if you go to www.superkickmma, you're going to see my kick against John Wood. I knocked him out in, 15 seconds or something like that. And I kicked Travis Fulton with the exact same kick, and I hit him twice. And Travis just took it, and he just smiled. Afterwards, he's a broken jaw. His jaw looked like a softball. But the guy just kept coming, man. He's a beast.
Yeah.
And that was a dream fight for a while, because there's you, who has hundreds and hundreds of fights, and then there's Travis Wooten, who has like what, over 500 fights. It's like,
no, he's got 300, little 300 fights, a little over 300.
And we have
counting. Who's counting? No one's counting.
Gabe, what's going on, brother?
What's going on? Sorry, I'm late. Had the family obligations. Jump on in when I could.
Yes, sir.
Proceed with what you're talking about.
Yeah, man. We're just talking about his fight with Travis Wooten. And you got a question for us, Gabe?
You know what? You've been in MMA for since the 90s, right? A storied career. You've fought in Pride and had the opportunity, I think, King of the Cage champion. Is that correct?
Yeah, I fought King of the Cage. Yep.
And you're still active in MMA. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm still active in MMA, kickboxing, Muay Thai, Lethwei, bare knuckle boxing. Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Hey man, you name it. I'll play you checkers, man. I don't care.
Yeah, no. My buddy Dave Novigrad fought you in the Masters Worlds 2 years ago.
Oh yeah. That's right.
Yeah, Dave talks about you highly. So
yeah, he's a good guy, man. I'm real respectful for these guys, man. Everyone that gets out there and either, you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, anybody that gets in there and competes. Hey man, my hat's off to you, because it's a lot of work. A lot of people don't realize how much work goes into training. Yeah. And I mean, you might talk a lot of smack prior to fighting, but my hat's off to everybody, man. Really.
So what motivates you to keep going?
You know, I always just want to try to get better. I feel, you know, even at my age now, and that I feel like I'm in my prime right now. I feel like I'm just now figuring it out, you know. And every time that I go to fight, it's like whatever I worked on previously, I want to get better. If I lose, I go back, figure out why I lost, and then try not to do that same thing again.
So
okay, but like age is a massive part. Eh? Like I'm 43.
Now you're just a baby.
I still feel like an idea of going out there and fighting. But you just feel like that the drive to improve. I mean, I'm in the gym every day, but mm-hmm. I recognize that I can't train the way I want to train to prepare for an actual match. But you feel like it's the competition is what drives you to get better.
Yeah, that and it just, it's a personal thing, you know. I always want to just try to get better, you know. It's a real personal thing about just trying to be better.
Okay.
And how, and my question too is, how are you able to? Because there's so many legends that are broken down. They have all these injuries, especially the guys like Gabe and you and all these fighters that fought wars all over the country and all over the world. How were you able to stay so healthy, especially at 50 years old, 50 years young, so to speak, and
age
still
be able to
compete when all these guys, all these legends right now, they're suffering the battle wounds, so to speak.
Okay, so it's not going to be like the best scenario or whatever, but I'll tell you, man, the longevity of my career was when I would fight, obviously go out and fight as hard as I can for as long as I can. But when you get to a point where you're just getting your face smashed in, just tap. There's a point in the fight where you realize, hey man, I'm not going to win this fight. There was a fight just the other night in the UFC where the guy went all rounds. He got his ass kicked from round one to round five, I think it was. He fought Max Holloway. That fight should have been stopped in the third round, in my opinion. Those just bad cornermen. Those cornermen weren't taking care of the fighter. In my position, I've always felt, if I'm getting my ass kicked and there's no way I'm going to win that fight and I'm just getting pounded, then tap. Yeah, live another day. Come back. Try it again some other time. I mean, I know everybody says, oh, man, the guy's a pussy and he tapped. Well, no, I think I'm being smart. Obviously, I'm still out here fighting and you guys are retired. So, I mean, you got to be smart about it. A lot of people don't want to hear that. I mean, I'll go out and fight. Believe me, I'm going to give it everything I got. But there's a point when if you're losing and you're not going to win, I mean, you got to figure out that enough's enough.
Okay. I really like that you don't want your pride getting away.
So I haven't taken damage like some of these other guys. Ensign Inouye, for example, I've watched him just get beat to death, man, and the guy wouldn't tap. But how much brain damage does that take? You know, I was that guy that tapped. I was a quick tapper, I guess. They call you a fast tapper or whatever. You know, I'm honest with that. I can, you know, I got anybody that ever fought me or everyone wrestled me or whatever, they're going to say, hey, man, that guy's good. Or they're going to say, oh, I beat him. Well, they're going to say that regardless. If you took that fight and you got your ass kicked for five rounds, or if you got your ass kicked for a minute and a half, win or lose. I mean, you either won or you lost. It's going to happen no matter what.
Right. So, actually, interesting enough, this is something that I've known about your career for many, many years, whether it be on the message boards as a fan and then fighting. And that was one thing that was always said, that you were notorious for tapping quickly. And that obviously, you know, everyone has a different opinion or a different feeling how things are. Now, when you're training in the room, is it the same? Because, like, I know many, many fighters in the room, they'll tap 10, 50, 30 times. They don't care. But when it comes to fight time, they would rather die than to quit.
Right. And that's the point where, you know, yeah, if you keep, you know, you could catch me in an arm bar or a heel hook or something, I'm going to tap. Let's just use Don Fry for an example. Don Fry fought for Ken Shamrock, got his knees twisted, his ankles twisted, and Don is now barely can walk. He's had multiple operations. I mean, I love the guy to death. He's a good friend of mine, but come on, man, I should have tapped. Bro, if your arm is getting busted and breaking, your ankle's getting busted and breaking, who are you not tapping for? Is it for you or for the fans? I mean, I don't get it. I don't understand why you would put yourself in that situation where you're going to ruin your body. I mean, I'm going to have a life after fighting, and I'm not going to ruin it for fighting. You know what I mean? I mean, you can say what you want. You know, my gym's always open. Anybody wants to come roll with me. I'm a fourth degree black belt, and I'm a world champion in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And, you know, I've got, you know, 8 world titles. I got a belt in every weight class. And I started fighting at 155. I got a belt at 155, 170, 185, 205, and heavyweight. I don't know how many other guys can say that.
Yeah, and that's an interesting topic that you brought up with the Don Fry versus Ken Shamrock fight, because that happened in 2002. It was at Pride Bad Blood, and those guys at the press conference, they were heated. Like, Don Fry was in the corner of Kazuyuki Fujita when Fujita fought Ken Shamrock. Like,
absolutely, yeah.
Those guys, there was literally it was a blood rivalry between the two, and those guys both said, "I will rather die than lose to this person." And
right.
You see Ken Shamrock and Don Fry both stuck in that heel hook, and that took years off Don Fry's career. And Don Fry even came on the show and admitted that.
He's still living with it today. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I do see your point too. Like, now that you're able to stay healthy, because you know when it's checkmate, you know when checkmate's coming, when you're in check, you know, live the fight another day, you know, learn from your mistakes, keep on getting better, and fight and take a next fight. But going back, switching topics, you know, you also pro wrestled against Ken Shamrock. Is that correct? Or you guys got involved with an angle?
No, see, it was for Heart Legacy Wrestling. Actually, Ken Shamrock came out and he was my corner man. So Ken and I are, you know, with the script and the storyline is Ken and I are buddies, and we're on the same team, and he's going to be my battle buddy.
Awesome. And how'd you get involved with acting? I want to know how you got on Chuck Norris's show. Like, how'd you get involved with acting?
Dude, man, who's my coach? Carlos Machado. Carlos Machado is Chuck Norris is a black belt under Carlos. We're training in Dallas, Texas, and Carlos is like, "Hey, we get you on the show." Oh, absolutely, man. I was on Unsafe Speed, and the other one was Medieval Crimes. So two different Walker episodes.
Awesome.
Yeah, pretty cool.
And then I saw that you did a movie with Mike Beltran. I know Mike pretty well. I've never seen the movie. There's not much information except for the title. Outside that, can you tell me more about that?
What was the title? Do you remember?
Something Samurai.
What was it?
Something like The Last Real Samurai.
Oh, The Last Samurai. Yeah. We filmed that, and what they did is they put it in the can, and I'm yet to see it. So I have no idea right now.
What is the basis of that?
It's a Lifetime documentary on myself. So it's gonna, supposedly we're working the details right now. It's gonna come out on Netflix, and once they work their deal out, then you'll see the life and times of Shannon the Cannon. It's called The Last Samurai. Mike Beltran was the commentator and the narrator. I guess he was the host of the commentary.
Okay, I know Mike really well. Yeah. Looked it up. The one that kept coming up is The Last Samurai, the Tom Cruise movie. And I'm just like, I'm not really sure what this is. And then I did a more thorough search, which, I mean, put your name in there as well. And it came up with you and Mike. And I'm like, oh, I know Mike really well. I've never heard him talk about it.
Send me your email. I'll send you the trailer.
Awesome. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. It's a really cool trailer, man. They followed me around for 2 years, and they got some, man, they got footage that I'd never seen before. So they did a really good job. It's amazing.
Fucking awesome. Al, you got a question?
Yeah. Actually, I was going to go back a subject. When I really love your mentality about everything, and, you know, I really wish there was more fighters like you advocating to take care of yourself as a fighter and kind of ignore your pride. Because even as I got older, I looked back and realized, like, there was a lot of fights I really should not have taken, but pride got in the way of, I'm not going to be that person to say, no, I won't fight that person. But at right. the same time, like, what is the big deal? You can't sit there and think that you're going to beat every single fighter out there. It's no problem to me, like, hey, that person is a little more skilled above me, and I'm just not going to take it because that's just a stupid fight.
Yeah, I wish actually the Shannon now could talk to the Shannon in the early 90s, and there would probably have been a lot of fights I wouldn't have taken if we could have done it over. But, you know, you got to remember, in the early 90s, there were no MMA schools. There were no MMA camps.
No.
We were doing this in our garages. There were no camps. I mean, we didn't have coaches. We were coaching each other. We're watching, you know, what we could to try to figure out, you know, what's a submission? What is this armbar that Royce Gracie's doing? How did he do that? oh, my God. Yeah.
Well, then you have these guys that are like, oh, I'm so tough. I never tapped. I never gave up. But, like, how many concussions have they had?
Yeah, well, I tell people this. If you've never tapped, then you never fought nobody. You know? If you never tapped, you never fought nobody. There's always somebody bigger and better. Always. I don't care who you are. There's always somebody bigger and better.
My my buddy Robert has a question. What was it like doing business with the folks of Pride? Because, obviously – Yakuza Clan was running wild, and there was a lot of shady stuff behind the scenes. What was it like doing business? I know Battle Arts super fucking cool and one of the most upgraded pro wrestling companies in Japan.
I'm going to tell you from a guy who's had over 236 professional MMA fights, and he's fought all over the world in every single organization you could think of. Pride was by far the best promotion I ever fought for. From airline tickets to travel to hotels to food to training to get you in a sauna to get you to cut weight, anything that you needed, they helped you. I mean, I'm going to hats off to Pride. They best organization I ever fought for, 100%.
Awesome. And if you can get a dream opponent from the beginning of your career till now, any generation, any fighter, who would be the fighter that you would want to fight?
I want to rematch Sakuraba. If I could fight him now, I want a rematch. I think I could beat him now.
And he's also a very good pro wrestler, too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We trained for 3 days one time, and I learned a lot. I learned a lot from Sakuraba. Believe me, Sakuraba showed me a lot of stuff. Great guy.
Soon you'll be Nico Takada, man. You can't beat the Takada Gojo. Fucking love them.
Absolutely.
So you were saying you fought everywhere. I mean, do you regret that you never had an opportunity to fight in UFC, or do you feel
I mean, that's absolutely one of my that's in the documentary too. You know, I had there's some talks with me and Dana White. We're talking. It's on film, and you know that's definitely one of my regrets. I guess that, you know, early on, Pat Miletich and I were in a hotel and kind of, you know, I was calling him out, which, you know, probably shouldn't have been doing that, but you know, you're young, you're stupid, and he's the champ. And we're at the hotel, and I'm kind of talking to him, and then there's this little guy by the name of Joe Silva, and he comes and he gets in between us, and I kind of shove him a little bit, and at that point Joe's like, you'll never fight for the UFC, and I never did. So you know, I'm friends with Joe Silva, and we're cool, but yeah, he just was like, yeah, you're never gonna fight for me. So that's, I think I ruined my chances of fighting in the UFC with that being a little arrogant and loudmouth guy that I was.
So you feel that by pushing Joe Silva, which I mean, I kind of get how he I know Joe pretty well, or not really well, but I know Joe, and I can see how he'd be a little.
And you got to remember, this was before he worked for the UFC. This was back when he was with Tito, and you know, he was kind of just hanging around with the UFC, and then he became the matchmaker, and yeah, that ruined my career. But you can ask Joe. You can also ask Joe Silva, who's the best self promoter, and he's going to say Shannon Rich, hands down. I sent him a highlight video, a trading card, an 8x10, all wrapped up, nice packaged. I got a degree in computer graphics, desktop publishing, and I do a lot of my own marketing my whole career. And a lot of times, that's how I got fights. Is you sent a really good resume and a highlight video and 8x10s, trading cards, all that stuff. Promoters are like, wow, who's this guy? You know? And
is that how you got the Sakuraba fight?
What's that? No, I got the Sakuraba fight. Because I was promoting a show in Texas called The Underground. And I had a guy by the name of Saito. And Saito turned out to be Fujita. And I treated him and the guys from Japan really well. Picked them up in a limousine. I put them in a hotel, paid for their food. And they happened to be with Don Fry. And Don Fry's a really good friend of mine. I took care of the Japanese guys because Saito needed a fight because he was getting ready to fight Mark Kerr, Fujita. And after that, they were like, hey, you know, we have a fight. Someone needs to fight Sakuraba. And Don Fry called me up and said, hey, you want to fight Sakuraba main event Pride 11? I was like, oh, yeah. Well, absolutely. So that rest is history.
Ali, you got a question?
No, I mean, that was just a great story.
Fuck yeah.
Believe me, I got tons of stories, man. I've, you know, obviously been doing this for 30 years and you know a lot.
I have no doubts that you have story upon story, but I did. You are fighting in bare knuckle boxing again, correct? We had a guest on a few weeks ago. He's promoting the bare knuckle, the Scandinavian countries versus the world or something along the lines. But you're fighting for Finland, I believe.
Norway.
Sorry, yeah.
Ragnarok.
Ragnarok, exactly. Yeah. So
what's the deal with that? I'm fighting for Stan the Man. Big shout out to Stan. He called me up and said, hey, do you want to fight? You want to fight for our title? We've got a guy we're going to fight for a belt. He's a lethwei champion, kickboxing champion, British bare knuckle boxing champion. And obviously I have the BKFC belt. I'm 26-3, 26 wins by knockout. And we're going to go out there and fight June 5th in Norway, fight for Ragnarok. Hopefully I get another belt and, just keep on going.
How many belts do you currently carry right now?
I have 36 belts, 8 world titles.
Holy shit.
I got a handful. And they're not all MMA. I got some the Naga belts, obviously. They don't really mean that much. You go out and win a submission grappling match. That's one thing. And then obviously, I don't know if you can see on the wall over here. I got a handful of
what's up, guys?
All right,
a whole bunch of medals there.
So, are we at your school? Is this your school here?
Yeah, Cannon BJJ. It's my school. Okay. Yeah,
great.
You can go to cannonbjj.net. You can see my website.
So,
not bad for 50, right?
Not bad at all. Not bad at all. So, my friend Matt asks, Knuckle Mania. Paige Van Zandt, what's your opinion on the Paige Van Zandt fight?
Man, I obviously wish Paige could do some bare knuckle boxing before she goes to fight. Maybe some smokers or I don't know. I don't think it's good for her. But you know, Paige is a really nice person. I know her and her husband real well. I wish her all the best. She's great. You know, I just wish she had some experience before getting into that square circle. A lot of people, they don't understand bare knuckle boxing. They think it's a boxing match, and it's not. It's a fight. Bare knuckle boxing is precision boxing. You have to know when and where to hit, because if you hit wrong, you're going to break your hand. You hit them on the forehead. You hit them on the elbows. I mean, it's precision boxing. If you don't know how to bare knuckle box, and then, you know, there's a sport to it. There's a theory of bare knuckle boxing, and some older guys can teach you how to do that. These guys that go in and box, they've never hit bare knuckle hard as they can. Bare knuckle, they're going to break their hand. They're going to hurt. They're going to get cut. I just think they need the right training for bare knuckle boxing. And that's what the sport of bare knuckle boxing is lacking, because there's not a lot of that can put you under the wing and teach you how to become a bare knuckle boxer, because it's still a new sport in the United States. Man, over in Europe, they've been doing it for 100 years. Well, we've been doing it too, but it's been all underground. And so there's only a handful of guys.
Did you find a bare knuckle coach, or do you just feel that because of all your experience, you're more than prepared?
Oh, I researched it, man. I spent years researching bare knuckle boxing. Bare knuckle boxing is it's a sport of its own, you know. It dates back all the way back from John L. Sullivan. You got to watch how John L. Sullivan was training. You got to watch how he was wrapping his hands when he's training. And they're not just punching the bag with bare knuckle. They're wrapping their hand, but what they're doing is wrapping the wrist, and the knuckles are bare. You got to toughen up your knuckles. You got to feel it, and then you got to get hit. Getting hit with a bare knuckle is a lot different than getting hit with a boxing glove.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're gonna wrap it up.
Let's wrap it up.
Alan, one more question from you guys.
I'm out of questions.
Gabe, go for. Oh, Gabe, you're out.
I'm done. I'm out.
Awesome. So obviously you're more into bare knuckle than MMA. Do you think that if this was more of an option when you started, would you have ever gone into MMA, or would you just stay bare knuckle?
Hey, I consider myself the ultimate athlete. You know, I do everything. So if there's a crowd and there's a paycheck and we can fight, then I'm going to do it. So that I don't know about that. I mean, if it was bare knuckle boxing and it was legal, obviously I would have done it. So I was fighting bare knuckle boxing illegally, making money. I mean, you got to remember, I was fighting in the early 90s, and I was just making myself as a professional fighter. I wasn't working a regular job. I was fighting. There's so many people that say, oh, I'm a professional MMA fighter. Well, what do you do for work? Oh, I work at Lowe's. I work at Home Depot. No, man, I was a fighter only. I made a living fighting. I fought every single weekend for years, years and years and years. I fight on Friday, fight on Saturday, sometimes fight on Sunday. Sometimes, you know, fight 3-4 times in a night. Guys don't do that anymore. So that's that's it. But hey, I got a big shout out, man. If you guys know Skillset Magazine, go to skillsetmagazine.com. It's a men magazine. It's about shooting, guns, ammo, all that kind of stuff. In February, there's this 4-page article on Shannon the Cannon, and it's a really cool article. So I hope you guys get the magazine. Skillset Magazine.
Gabe is actually a big shooter himself, right, Gabe?
Ah, man, love it, man. I shoot every day, man. Pretty much all the time I'm out there shooting. You got all this practice.
I would say weekly.
Yeah, weekly, man. You got to practice, man. Even if you're at home, just do dry fire. You know what I mean? Sign alignment, yep. Trigger squeeze, trigger pull. You got to make 100%. It muscle memory. Got to make it muscle memory every day.
100% agree.
So one more question before we let you go, and we thank you so much. It's a huge honor to talk to you, obviously.
No, I appreciate you guys having me out, man. This is a lot of fun, man. Big shout out to Absolutely. Ragnarok and Stan the Man. Guys, bare knuckle boxing is going to be the next big thing. If you guys can, watch Ragnarok June 5th. It's going to be a great show.
One more question before we let you go. You know, you have a school open. You had this long storied career. You went through kickboxing, bare knuckle, pro wrestling, MMA. You were an actor. You're going to be in a movie with Donald Cerrone and Mickey Rourke. Look out for it on Netflix. With all those students in the room, and somebody comes up to you and says, Shannon, I want to become a professional fighter. I want to follow your path. What is the one piece of advice you can pass down to the new generation of fighters?
I'll say, how bad do you want it? Show me. Show me how bad you want it, because it's not easy. It's not an easy. It's not an easy road, and you got to really show me how bad you want it, because it's not. Nothing is coming handed to you. You know what I mean? You got to work for it.
Wise words from a great fighter and obviously a legend of the game. Any last words? Anywhere you can, we can find you. Any websites you want to shout out? Sponsors, please. I leave you the floor.
Hey, Shannon the Cannon, and then obviously it's Shannon the Cannon, and then. CannonBJJ.net. CannonBJJ.net. Big shout out to my gym that I do my strength and conditioning at, this one on Happy Valley. I mean, on Union Hills and 35th Avenue. Guys, get a chance. Man, Fitness One is a great gym. CannonBJJ.net. Ragnarok, June 5th. I want you guys to watch this show I'm going to be doing with Bruce Willis. I got a movie coming out with Bruce Willis, too. I'm doing that all next month. I'm going to be filming, and then I'm going to be filming a movie. And then I'm going to be filming a movie with Nicolas Cage. So three big movies coming out, guys. This summer, you see Shannon the Cannon on a big screen.
Fucking awesome, man. And thank you so much for coming on, Shannon. Shannon the Cannon, Rich, thank you very much for coming on the show. It was an honor to talk to you. And I wish you the best in your future endeavors. And we're going to be rooting on Random Rock and also watching the three movies that are going to be coming out. Thank you so much, brother.
All right, man. I appreciate you guys, All man. Right. You guys have a great night.
Take care.
Awesome. All right, yeah. Bye-bye. You
too. Great interview. Awesome.
He was really cool.
Yeah, I just always wanted to talk to him. You know, I watched him when I was a kid when he fought Sakuraba. He came out like a badass. He had that blonde mohawk, came out with the tap out t-shirt, looking like a badass. And this is when Sakuraba was a fucking buzzsaw and killing everybody. And this is the Gracie Hunter when he was running through the Gracies too. So always wanted to talk to him. And, you know, you look online, he's everywhere. So always one of those guys, one of those pioneers. It's like Mr. Gabe, one of those pioneers that had a long story career, a lot of adventures in the sport. So it was definitely an honor to talk to him.
I mean, it was interesting. The mindset. I think he was alluding to that. He took MMA or fighting as a career, and so tapping was an opportunity for. I think from what I gathered that was like, you know, he didn't want to get hurt, so he just would tap. My personal feeling is that's a little different. Have I tapped? Of course I've tapped, but I have had multiple times where people were smashing my face and I didn't once think that it was time to quit it or that I wasn't having an opportunity to win. I guess it's a different mentality, but I mean, I guess if you're looking at as I can make money, I'm doing this as a business, the way he's doing it is a little bit better. And I mean, I don't know, a little bit better, but that's where you're gonna garner definitely more losses that way. But
if you're doing it as your business, you want to make sure you're not gonna be injured for weeks on end before you can do your next fight. So I mean, that is smart.
Especially I'm sorry, Gabe. What were you saying?
No, I it's just a different perspective. Because I know many, many people when they're training in the room, they'll tap, they have no problem with tapping. But in a fight, they would rather die than to quit.
Yeah, so and that's the thing too. You'd rather die for a sport you compete in.
Right.
Which is like, also,
yeah. And I mean, like I said, I had the same mentality for the longest time. And it's just almost in recent years, I got older, it's like, you know what? My pride wasn't that fucking important. Maybe I should have protected myself a little bit more and not worried about what do I look like if I do this to these fans who had never fought before or give a shit about me afterwards, what they're going to think of me if I give up because I knew I was losing.
That's a fair point too, but also he built a franchise out of this. Like you got to protect your moneymaker, especially. And Gabe, you open up a business in the sport, training the next generation, just like Shannon. But also he had all these commitments, especially with acting, movies. And he wanted longevity in the sport, so he chose the path of longevity. I respect it. And I see both sides of the coin too. Gabe's point, Shannon's point, and Shannon turned this into a big. You know, he's going to be in three movies. He's going to be with fucking Bruce Willis. That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely had a storied career. I mean, he's been all over the world and done things that many, many others have yearned to do. I just a different concept, a different mindset about fighting.
Right.
It's a different perspective.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of cool that the fact that like not being able to get in the UFC didn't even hinder his career like at all.
But I always saw it too, and Gabe, I wanted to talk to you about this. Like, would you say that being in Pride is more of a medal, a medallion on your notch on your belt, so to speak, than being in the UFC? Because UFC is still around. It's not going away. It's under the confines of a public trade company. Going to Pride is. You know, that is a huge accomplishment considering no one can go into Pride anymore. None of these new guys will ever know what it's like to be in that, go out with the parade of fighters, like have that the crazy Pride lady announce her name besides probably fighting for Ryzen, but nobody will have that achievement on their record. Anyone can get in the UFC, like anyone can work towards that, but not everybody can go into Pride anymore, you know? Like, so I always saw that as an accomplishment. Itself, you know,
nobody can go into Pride now, and I mean, that Pride was an organization above and beyond anything else. And you being the historian of MMA, you're exceptional about knowing the go arounds of that. Pride is legendary for those that know. There are probably anybody now that says that Conor McGregor is the best friend or their favorite fighter has no idea what Pride is, more than likely. Having that as an opportunity, like, look, the unfortunate part for Shannon, is UFC is the 800 pound gorilla. And you could say I fought in Pride and I did this, I did that. And people are like, what about the UFC? Like that, like there are people that don't even know what MMA is. MMA or UFC has become the Coca-Cola of MMA.
Right? Yeah, there's a lot of people that don't even realize that UFC is just a place to do MMA and it is not MMA. I've had so many people are like, oh yeah, you're a UFC fighter. No, I'm not. That's not the same thing.
You train UFC? No.
UFC. I was like, that's like going out and playing your basketball and be like, yeah, I'm in the NBA.
I play NFL. That's
mm-hmm. I went to a bar one time and somebody said they were a black belt in UFC. Not even kidding. West Nyack, New York, went to a bar, Horse and Jockey, and this guy was outside with two girls. He's like smoking a cigarette. He's like, yeah, I was a black belt in UFC. And I'm like, let me guess. You know, you didn't want to fight because your coach told you that you would kill somebody. He's like,
yeah. I had a guy tell me that he was a Russian UFC champion. He's a Russian. It's when I was in the Marines. I was on the Marine Corps team. I became the Russian UFC champion. I'm like, wow, that's fucking pretty badass.
Who gave you your black belt, sir? Well, it was actually classified. It's under wraps.
I don't want to talk about it. It was I'm going to get another beer.
Oh, they're like, oh, I have an assault charge so that I can't. I'm not allowed to sign up. Like, what?
Oh, my God.
I've heard them all.
Sure you have. So, boys and girls. Yeah. Oh, what were you saying, sir? I'm sorry.
Me? Oh, I just said I've heard them all, including two separate occasions where someone was telling someone around me that they were a fighter that I know for a fact they were not. And I'll tell the story some other time. One guy was telling a girl that he was BJ Penn.
What was this? Was this in Vegas?
Yeah, did I say that story already? Yeah. And then another one was saying he was Tank Abbott. Oh, nice. Yeah, hilarious.
I do have a story though. I did lie about my record. I was training at this one gym. I wanted to get a fight, so I said I was 6-0. True story. I got into the mat and they found out I wasn't 6-0, but. You know, I got in there,
my friends.
2009.
Yeah. I've heard, that they're a black belt. Their hands are registered weapons. They're not allowed to be in a fight.
I had someone ask me how they register them. And me being me, I said, you need to go to the police department. You need to find their special weapons and tactics unit. And ask there because they're the only ones that can give those out.
Crazy. Unfucking people.
Come on, you gotta ask me a stupid question. I'm gonna give you a ridiculous answer.
I've even heard someone say they were supposed to fight one night and that they couldn't because the promoter called and said they were full and they didn't have room for another match on the card. I'm like, that is never true. Like, they will go until midnight if they have more people coming in.
Wait. So somebody was supposed to fight, and they told
they said that they were supposed to fight, and all, this was back in the day where they didn't have like set cards. You could just go in, whatever. Yeah. They said they were scheduled that night. Obviously, they didn't fight, and then later, like, hey, you know, why didn't you fight? And they're like, oh, the promoter called, and they said they were full, and they didn't have room for any more matches.
It was so easy to get a fight. All you gotta say is, yeah, I'm 6-0, and they say, okay, you're gonna be matched up with this guy. Because back in the day, they had smoker fights. Smoker fights were everywhere. They just pretty much invite you to a gym. You can either do grappling matches or you can do fights. And, you know, there was no sanctioning. There was coaches there, and they could watch over you.
You can sign up day of.
No, I know. Yeah, I'm
there's guys that were fighting that were drunk.
Now, when you say back in the day, how far back in the day are we going? Because that was not an opportunity for me.
I'm going like 2009, like 2010.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gabe literally is going to be laughing at us. I'm so sorry.
In 02, that's when I had my first fight. It was so hard to get fights because they weren't legal. They had to be on Indian reservations. There were no promoters. There was it was illegal. So having something that like an amateur thing would immediately get busted by the police.
Oh yeah.
So you either did underground fights, which were near impossible to get, or you would do these fights on the Indian reservation, and they were quote unquote pro because there was no amateur circuit at that point.
Yeah, so even where we did our fights, the town itself kept trying to shut them down all the time and didn't want them there.
So my first title fight was for a promotion. It was out of Brandenburg, Kentucky. So I flew from Boston all the way to Brandenburg, Kentucky. It was my first title fight. It was a rainy night, stormy weather, and it was in a barn. Swear to God, not even fucking lying. I fought someone that was 145, it was 125. My original opponent backed out, but fucking wild, crazy. Ali, so back in the day, like, were you able to find? Because I know the major promotion that I can name back in like 2002, 2003 was probably Smack Girl in Japan. But like, how hard was it to find a female MMA fight?
for you? There's like probably seven in the state that were going, and so you fought almost any weight class because there's no girls, and they didn't really care about weight classes, so they'd put a 125 girl. I've seen it sometimes with a girl that's like 200 pounds, and they're just like, that's your only option. Take it or leave it.
Crazy. Fucking crazy. Aren't you lucky, Gabe, that you were in the UFC when we're like during the time where her and I were dabbling in the Emmys? Aren't you glad you were in the UFC and Chrissy Cozy and able to fight in this?
You're a little more taken care of.
Yes and no. I mean, the pro circuit at that point. I mean, I remember driving to the Gulf of Texas to take a fight. You know, we drove, I think, 27 hours. Me, Cole Escovedo, and two other people, because when we got there, my opponent didn't show up, and so I drove all the way for nothing. And then another time I drove up to Lake Tahoe, and they're like, oh, we don't have a 155 pounder, can you fight 185? And I'm like, no. And they're like, well, we have a 70 pounder, which one do you want? I'm like, I'll take the 70 pounder. And in the early days of any sport, it's going to be chaotic, and there's going to be a lot of those "are you fucking kidding me" moments. And like, we fought in reservations where they would have grudge matches, like tribal grudge matches. And they'd be wearing it'd be two guys from the Indian tribe that'd be wearing sneakers and and shorts with belt buckles and just like slobber knockers. It was, the good old days. The good old days.
You know what?
Everybody loved grudge matches because you know the two guys hated each other.
speaking of grudge matches, and this is one topic I want to bring up through Messenger, Gabe, because I want to talk about it in private, but speak about getting away with murder and grudge matches. King of the Cage, Wet and Wild. So back in the day, King of the Cage was like, literally, like Quentin Rampage Jackson would be wandering around. You had all these legends wandering around. King of the Cage was where it was at. And you had this one guy named Rafael Torre. He was an MMA journalist. He was a Marine, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, and he was one of the premier MMA journalists. I don't know if you know about this, Ali, but this is a great story. So, I read his articles fucking everywhere. He was like everywhere there was an MMA fight, on SureDog.com, everywhere. So, this guy said he was going to come back out of retirement. He was like 60, 40, something and O, and he had this grudge match with a student. So King of the Cage went and wild. He fought this huge guy, this big, huge guy. And the fight was sloppy. And even watching the tape, because my mom got me all these tapes like growing up. Shout out to mom. But like got me all these big boxes of tapes. And you watch this fight, you could absolutely tell that it was a stage fight. But he said he was like this black belt, he's a student. And they let it happen. And Bruce Buffer was the fucking announcer of that fight. Like, speaking of getting away with murder, and also he ended up killing somebody.
Yeah, he didn't get away with it. So, Rafael has been, he obviously, all the stories about him, but I know, I met Rafael years and years before he went to
whoa.
And I don't know him well, when I moved to Southern California, I was part of a team called Millennia. And at the time, they had two champions that were King of the Cage champions that were from Millennia. So I fought King of the Cage once, but all of our guys fought there. It was constantly, we're always at all the fights. And Rafael was always there. And it's actually pretty funny. It's the very last time I saw him is when his story started to kind of get outed. And so I can't remember who he was talking to, but he was just like, no, you're hearing this and it's not that. And you got to understand and it's context and this and that, like, because all of the story was unraveling. And he had this ridiculous, it would have worked well in the 80s because no one could really discern fact from fiction. I think even it was on Joe Rogan's podcast where he talks about he had a buddy drop him off in the desert with a duffel bag, and he's like, I'm gonna do a kumite. And then his friend comes back the next day And the guy, Rob Vale, has the bag that he had and a trophy, but the bag is now empty. And so he's got this trophy, and his friend's like, what happened with all of the stuff that was in your bag? And Rob Vale was like, what do you mean? I lost some of my equipment, and Rob Vale was, and then he said he was a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, and then when he got outed on that, he's like, no, my dad is a Japanese Jiu-Jitsu black belt, but he's Brazilian. You know what? Look, there was a time frame where if you could talk and you were friendly with people, you could do some shit. And Rob Vale did some shit, like really genuinely. He was able to put up a fight. You know, he had Terry Treblecock believing that he had this beef with his former student, which he was able to fabricate and make it look like he got a win. And he, at the time, I think he was writing for a couple of magazines. And again, there wasn't social media. You know, the internet was, it was there, but it wasn't like it is now. Not even remotely close to where, you know, if you say something, I can say something right now and it'll be debunked within 15 minutes. You know what I mean? Yeah. This is the time frame. You can say some nonsense and people be like,
Back then you could say some shit like, hey, I got to go home and Google that. I'll get right back to you. Pulled up on your phone right here.
He genuinely had a story that he won a kumite. He went, it was a desert of the forest. Like he had a buddy drop him off. And his buddy's like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm going to do this fight, this death match. No one can come. I have to go in and do it alone. And he had a duffel bag. And then when he came out, the duffel bag was empty and he had a trophy from winning the kumite.
Never heard about that.
Oh, yeah. But it's amazing. And then he killed. So his wife, him and his wife were swingers. Yeah. And his wife was like, what, which is so crazy that. The swingers turn into something more serious but she started like really getting together with this guy and Rafael found him at a grocery store and he rear naked choked him to death. He killed him with a rear naked choke.
In the grocery store?
No, in the parking lot.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's better.
The reason why he got caught is because he was driving around the guy's car.
No, he got caught because he told his nephew, Gerald Strebrent, that he had done it. And Gerald came forward and was like, I'm not, because he wanted Gerald to lie and like tell some story about where he was at. And Gerald actually went to the police and said, no, that's not the case at all.
Well, they were going to figure it out.
Yeah.
No, they found the guy dead in his own truck. I know that.
And right, yeah, they're gonna notice you got strangled to death though too.
He was a black belt in jiu-jitsu. They're like, who do we know who's a black belt in jiu-jitsu and has won kumites? There's only one man in the whole town.
Who is the only person able to do something this destructive?
I heard this fucking genius was having like an affair with some guy's wife. So this is a story I got. Was he was having an affair with some guy's wife? Okay, and like the wife was like, kill my husband so we can be together, and. That's how he ended up killing the husband with a rear naked choke, and he stole the guy's truck or something. This is a story I heard, and that's how he got caught.
I like that version more.
There's an embellishment. I'll be honest. I don't know the story well enough, and I'm not going to go on.
Yeah,
notes
I was say, we can't just sit there and say like this is what happened because now there's three different stories.
But So the things that I do know for a fact that he did in fact kill the guy. Who the guy was, whether it was he was having an affair with the wife or his wife was having an affair with him, I'm not sure about that part. But I do know that Gerald Strebrent was the one that turned him in.
I have one serious question about this. Are they making a Lifetime movie about this? Because this sounds like a great plot line.
I'd love to
watch this movie.
They absolutely should. And
This is definitely a Lifetime movie.
And going back to the original point, he bullshitted his way to the top. Quentin Rampage Jackson had him in his corner when he fought for Pride. So Quentin Rampage Jackson had Rafael Torre in his corner when he fought Kazushi Sakuraba. I shit you not. And Tito Ortiz, Gabe's favorite fighter of all time and bedtime hero, and favorite politician, by the way, Tito Ortiz has a picture with his prick And they had like a big picture on Sure Dog. And like, you know, the 2000 photo when like, you know.
There's nothing more appropriate than a Rafael Torre, Tito Ortiz picture. There's nothing more appropriate than that.
And how about that Tito Ortiz incident at that burger place? He's the greatest politician ever. Making California great again, baby.
Yeah, I think that my favorite part is that he said, you lost my business and you lost Huntington Beach's business. And Huntington Beach was like, you don't speak for me, motherfucker. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go order the food right now.
All right, we got to wrap this up like a Christmas present. We got to have an Ask Gabe episode. Matthew, we got to make this fucking happen. Allie, Gabe, me, Ask Gabe episode. We got to do it.
Get the questions ready.
Yeah.
Matt, you got to commit. Gabe, you have to
sign. We don't care how weird they are. The weirder, the better.
Exactly. I got some weird ones. Guaranteed.
All right. So, boys and girls, let's wrap this up like a Christmas present. Allie, final comments. What do you got to say?
I'm glad I got to be on today. Like, this guy that we had on today was an absolute legend and great stories, great experience. I'm glad I got to be here and talk to him. Gabe?
I just had another. I'm glad I was able to come on. I had family obligations, and all I did was I pushed my kid outside, and no, did not do that. But I'm thankful that I got to come on, and happy to be here every day.
You're the fucking man. And Matthew, any last questions? Any last words?
No, not really. Just make sure you download our apps if you're on your smart TV. Download the Fight Mixer app and. Yeah.
All right. So,
I can't do it. Oh, well.
So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thank you very much for joining us for the Fight Mixer. Tune in to Allie's show, the A Show, on Wednesday. Great guests, great hosts like Allie and Karina. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thank you very much for the Fight Mixer on Thursday. Thank you very much for joining us. Signing off.
Perfect. Perfect.